This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Hello, comrades and comradettes. Who's ready to get communist? There you go, Steve.
Is that not a snappy salute after like 30 years? That's still pretty damn good, ain't it?
I don't think communist salute, though.
No. Well, that's a British salute. I'm not going to do the Nazi salute. Somebody's going to take that out of context.
Communist fist bump, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, you're right. I think it's like that, right?
There right.
Awesome.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. It's against our, or not against, but this is highly unusual for our show. We're usually night owls, but we woke up early, and Steve has had like 3 pots of coffee, so he's good
you
and cracked
no
out. And yeah, it's gonna be fun.
I'm fine.
I see that you're not. You never were fine, Steve. You never were fine.
Oh, maybe I'm fine.
Just a couple quick things before we begin. First of all, we'll say hello to Frustrated Atheist, SJ,
hello.
The Christian Apologist, and Master Apologist, I believe, is your moniker, sir, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on. I do appreciate it.
Excellent. SJ, how are you? Long time no see.
Hi. Long time no see. Great to be here.
Glad to have you. And the pissed off pig underneath me would be Frustrated Atheist.
That indeed would be me.
That is truly the face of frustration. That's angry
is.
Bacon. Okay.
The angry.
Right. Just to remind you, if you are a patron of the show, we will be having a private hangout today at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can come by and hang out with us and just talk about whatever, have a good time. We've got a couple of special announcements that we're going to make concerning the rest of this month and next month and the Golden Nun. So if you have the time and you are a patron, make sure that you come hang out. I'll put the link in the Patreon page as well as the Discord server. So if you are part of Discord, you can head over there and check it there. Tomorrow we will also be back live again at 4 p.m. Eastern for a special presentation, and then again at 8 tomorrow night for the possum situation in New Zealand, which is devastating. So, big weekend with us. I hope you don't get tired of us because we're going to be here in your face for quite a few hours. And with that, we will go ahead and begin tonight. Look, I'm so used to saying tonight.
Somewhere in the world, it actually is.
This morning, this morning's debate, in which we will be talking about communism. Does it equate to atheism? And We will actually begin after we let these fine people introduce themselves and who they are and what they do and why they do it, all that good stuff, their channels, social media, all that jazz. And we will start
account numbers, social
with
security, all that.
Sure, if you want to. Why not? Nobody, it'll be fine. Nobody will take it. We'll start ladies first. SJ, why don't you introduce yourself to people who may not know who you are?
Hi, I'm SJ Thomason. I'm a university professor. I teach business management courses, which include leadership and human resource management, international management, and I like to talk about communism and capitalism quite a bit. So I'm excited to be here.
Excellent. All right, and Master Apologist.
My name is Joshua Brister, and I'm a teacher. I teach world history and United States history. You can find me at Joshua J. Brister on my Patreon account and on Twitter as Master Apologist. I very much thank y'all. I was under the impression that it was communism, capitalism, atheism, and Christianity. So that's kind of what I was inclined to think was going to be the debate today.
I think it'll probably get there, I'm sure. Frustrated atheist?
Yeah, I'm a frustrated atheist. I have a YouTube channel where I do a lot of debunking of complete and utter nonsense. I have two series that I'm going to be starting soon. One is Science for the Newly Deconverted. The other one being a look into the Steven Anderson / Matt Powell cult style of fundamentalists. And you can follow me on Twitter at Frustrated Atheist.
Excellent. Okay. I believe we will start with the team capitalism, I guess. SJ and Master Apologist, whichever one of you two would like to go first. The floor is yours.
I think we should define the term so people know what we're talking about. So when you say capitalism, it's basically talking about private ownership, and communism is the idea of workers. You know, the ideal form of communism basically speaks to workers having the ownership, and so that's the way to distinguish it. But in practice, they tend to differ. So I think it'd probably be great to have Joshua chat about this to start off, since he's a world historian.
Sure.
Well, I first wanted to read to you a quote from Milton Friedman, the Nobel Prize laureate in economics. I think it was 1974. He had this whole series in the 70s and 80s called Capitalism and Freedom. Here's his quote: "A society which is socialist cannot also be democratic in the sense of guaranteeing individual freedom." The way that we have individual freedoms and the ability to own private property, these are essential things to the West. This is why by the year 1500, the West was dominating the rest, as in Neil Ferguson's words, one time, or actually he's at Stanford now, he was at Harvard University. He did a YouTube series, and this aired in Britain. It was called The West and the Rest. He made this differentiation why in the year 1322, you had, under the Ming Dynasty in China, you had Chang He set sail. And by the time he got back to China, this was later on, but by the year 1322, the Ming Dynasty had put laid waste to any ships. The Ming Dynasty had not believed in progress and had made by fiat, made by law, that they were supreme and superb. The Western belief in progress, in a progressive evolution of ideas, of cultural evolution, has really made us supreme. And I think it's what a lot of people take for granted. We can't forget where these notions like private property and where they come from.
Okay. Anything you want to add, SJ, before we go to Frustrated?
I think that's good. I told you how I wrote this up, and it's unfortunately you can't really see all that I wrote up, but there's a basically when we talk about the far left and the far right, and we look at history and we look at just how it is, for example, in the United States, people who are on the right basically tend to be Republicans and conservatives, and if you're on the left, you're more Democrat and liberal, and if you go to the far right, you can go to the extreme case, and that would be fascism, and if you go to the far left in the extreme case, that would be communism. Between those areas are dimensions of socialism and that sort of thing, and then we have this is how it is in theory, and then we have how it is in practice. And how it is in practice tends to be that fascists and communism are closely related. Fascism's example was Nazism, and also Mussolini's way that he carried that out. And communism was exemplified through Stalin and Lenin and Mao Zedong and some others. So we see how it is in theory, basically based on Karl Marx and from the late 1800s. And then we have how it's based in practice, and we can see examples of these governments and those forms. In the United States right now, as you know, we're controlled by Republicans. People tend to be more focused on religion, and it does relate to capitalism and religion. So there is a correlation between the feeling of individual private ownership, capitalism, versus the Democrat side, which is more of a liberal side, and that. So that's where they're distinguished. I just wanted to go over those basics.
Okay. Frustrated?
Well, for starters, I would like to say that capitalism isn't just the private ownership of anything. It is also the fact that it is privately owned companies that are producing capital for economic-wise. So that, I mean, that right there, you went off of a very small, tiny thing of capitalism, which is somewhat correct, but it's not the complete scope of capitalism. Other than that, I've got nothing.
Okay.
Okay.
As far as what's been said.
Well, one thing that I think we're going to talk about a little bit today also relates to the fact that the farther to the right you tend to go, it tends to be more religious. And the farther to the left you go, it tends to be less religious. So that's something we were going to bring up, because in practice, those leaders that I just named also were atheists, and that's where there's somewhat of a correlation.
Which leaders did you bring up?
The debate is.
I'm sorry?
Which leaders did you brought up?
Okay, so I brought up examples with Lenin, Stalin, and Mao Zedong, who was the Chinese leader.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got whole entire thing argument about that already. So, okay. Once we get into it, I'll say what my argument for that is.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, well, all these leaders that you brought up, including Mao, were all actually just, they created personality cults, and personality cults replace any religion and put the government as the religion. And so, therefore, the whole entire society itself is no longer exactly atheistic. It's a personality cult. Everyone within this community believes or worships the government itself as the religion and the leader as their god, if you will. Many of these communistic societies back then were all personality cults, including Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, even Hitler, which Hitler wasn't atheistic, but it was still a personality cult, regardless. So in retrospect, you can really say that these aren't even atheistic communities, if you will.
How would you answer that, SJ? Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to say it's a personality cult. I can agree with you on the way that they worshipped. They wanted to be worshipped themselves. I mean, that even speaks to the North Korean leader right now, Kim Jong-un. He basically thinks that people should be worshipping him. So, and that's not unlike his grandfather and his father and others before him. So,
well, let's speak to the what the crux of the topic was, and that is that communism equates to atheism. Are you?
I did want to bring up one thing before we get there. Can is that okay?
Sure. Sure.
Well, I do think a lot of these dictators are trying to create the world in their own idiosyncratic view. And this is what happens with these government-centered, government-centralized government. This was a huge debate going on between Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson and the Anti-Federalists. Thank God we got a Bill of Rights out of that. America built on virtue. This was one of the reasons Jefferson and the Anti-Federalists were so against the Federalists. They knew that this could happen. Personality cults of a centralized government. And this is exactly what happens throughout history, and especially and most notably, I think, throughout the 20th century. So has communism been tried? Yes, it has been tried. It's been tried and shown wanting. So I don't think we can say that wasn't authentic communism. The worship of the state. And oftentimes that goes into the worship of the individual.
Okay, for starters, I didn't say that it wasn't, I didn't say that it wasn't true communism. I'm saying that it's not true. You cannot say that this is, that these communistic states are atheistic if you have replaced the religion with that of government, then you are worshiping the government and you're putting the leader of said government as the god. So you cannot say that these are truly atheistic states. These are communistic states that have these personality cults that keep them from being truly atheistic states.
Wouldn't you say, though, if you're replacing God above with the god of the communist country, wouldn't you say that that's essentially atheism? You're basically saying that there's no higher power. Instead, there's the power that you should respect in the government.
No, because you see, if you actually look at a lot of these personality cults, and one of the ones you can look at today would be North Korea, they worship the leader. The leader themselves is a god. As a matter of fact, they believe that members of the Kim family are they think that they're omnibenevolent geniuses. That's what these cult personalities do, is they make the leader itself God. And to be atheistic, there has to be no gods. If you go off of the philosophical definition of atheists, which then goes to that there are no gods. And even if you go into the colloquial definition of lack of belief in God or gods, either way, there is no God. And to these people, the leader themselves is a god.
Well, it's if you want to, again, go back to the distinction.
That,
okay.
I would just say that,
you get in on
yes, it technically doesn't make them atheistic. But there is a historic tendency, and I think we as historians, at least as a teacher of history, this is one thing I try to get across to my kids, my students, that we have to take ideas seriously. So one of Marx's ideas, which all these regimes in the 20th century took hold of, and Nietzsche and Dostoevsky certainly could see this, is that they are making the gods in their own, making government in their own image. And when you do that, when you start to worship individual, and that idiosyncratic belief that the individual represents the state. For this, I think we all believe in gods, and I think we have to get our theology straight. I think that's what your argument shows. And I think this is a reevaluation of these cults and their assumptions. That's why I think we need to get a proper relationship of, one, the individual, and two, the group. We can't emphasize or de-emphasize that at the expense of the other. And all throughout history, when one group does, they're not taking history seriously, and they're not. And that's what they're doing. They're emphasizing one at the expense of the other.
Well,
frustrated?
Well, the thing is, the individual that they are worshiping or whatever is the leader of the government. So that is not just them worshiping themselves. This is them worshiping a singular individual and making him a god. So again, this is not atheistic in any way, shape, or form. This is a religion in and of itself.
Yeah, but that's not my argument. I'm saying that they lean. There's a tendency, a historic tendency, for them to lean atheistic. You have this with Mao Zedong. You have this with Stalin. You have this with over 100 million people dead in the 20th century. And we can't take that for granted. As a teacher, I cannot look at my kids and say ideas don't have consequences.
And I'm not saying that they don't, but just because these people who rose to power got a big head of themselves and decided that they wanted the entire populace to run it the way they saw fit, and the way they saw fit just so happens to be in a personality cult style way, which being, you know, a teacher of history, you would know that Stalin himself successfully implemented a personality cult. And then you realize that this is no longer atheistic. This is a single man who had the idea to made the USSR run the way he saw fit. And the way he saw fit was everyone do as he said. And he went on a power trip.
It seems
that still does not equate to atheism.
It seems to me that you're almost trying to purify atheism and neglect the historic tendencies of the 20th century. If you take that seriously, no, it's not the definition that you find in the dictionary, but all these countries, like the former Soviet Union, had an official policy of going against the church, of just getting people out of the church, against the free worship of people. And again, there's a historic tendency.
Okay.
I'm not saying that there's a necessary element between these regimes and atheism. I'm saying when you try to make the world in your own image, well, I don't think we can get away. I think we all believe in some kind of gods. It's just, which god do we believe in?
Yeah, it's the old phrase, Joshua 24:15. It says, choose for today which god you will worship. Are you going to worship, you know, the god of yourself? Or are you going to worship the god of a higher power god, a divine god? So you have to look at which god. But I have to say something. There, you know, when we talk about the 100 million people who were killed under communism, a lot of them were starved to death. And they were starved because of communism just does not work as an economic policy. It's a failed policy, and we have a history of starvation through communism. And we also know for a fact that those communist leaders purged the churches. And in fact, today, it's still going on in China. They're still purging churches and still discriminating against Christians. And it's still many people are dying under the name of communism. So,
if you are creating a government where the government itself is the religion, and you are in charge of this government, the taking out religion is the taking out the other religions within your little area that you control would be the most strategic thing to do. Because these other religions will tell the main populace that, no, this man is not a god, he is a man, and whatnot. So that is just a strategic move that they've done throughout history. Now, I've not once argued, and nor would I argue, that communism is the best policy to have. I would never argue that if you're going off of, you know, the way communism has been implemented. Which I don't argue that. I'm not going to argue against that. I'm right there with you. I don't think that we should do anything communistic like that. But like I said, the biggest crux of this is pretty much if communism equates to atheism. And I still have not seen any evidence that shows that
this is the case.
Through
these are
through
different
Twitter.
Philosophical
Hold on one second, Joshua. I'm gonna try to steer us into a where we have a little bit of a direction here. The I believe this conversation was brought about by a Twitter conversation that you guys were having, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
And the basis of that Twitter conversation was the fact that, in a nutshell, it boils down to you believe that communism equates to atheism, correct?
No, I don't believe
communism. I believe the practice of communism correlates very strongly with atheism. I'll clarify what I said in that tweet. I put out a tweet that basically was a very simple one-line job that needed to be further clarified. So I'm glad I'm here to do that, because I'll say that the two certainly correlate in practice. They're highly correlated in practice.
Yes, and I will say that because correlation does not mean equation, that your whole entire tweet that you made of communism equates to atheism is false.
Well, let me clarify that I also realize that there are atheist capitalists, so and agnostic capitalists, and I know I'm looking at Steve right there.
And
Steve, basically, you're an example, right?
Of what?
And you
like
also
a looking guy?
You're an example. You're an example of a Republican atheist.
I am a fiscally conservative, social liberal. I like a lot about libertarian and temporal agnostic. Yeah, in a mouthful. You just call me Steve, though. That's fine.
He's a kook.
And we also have show signs of Christian communists too. So, I mean. What's
okay,
the point?
So what we need to do
Do you have an example of a Christian communist leader in practice? Christian communist who's
come
into power?
You have that Catholic Venezuelan leader who was also communist. I forget his name. Steve, what was his name? His name was...
Chavez? Hugo Chavez? Are you talking about Hugo Chavez?
Maybe.
Hugo Chavez from Venezuela. He's dead.
Yeah.
But he was,
he's
a socialist.
He's now.
There's arguments out there but that he was obviously a socialist, but there's also arguments whether he was a communist or not. I tend to think that he was both. Yeah. That my reading has been that he's both, but he's definitely a socialist. I think everybody would agree on that.
Yeah, he was a socialist, but he was definitely communistic too. He was.
Yeah, I think so as well, but I've had some pushback on that. But I think that's kind of surprising because everything I've read, but he was also additionally a communist as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So, help me understand then. I was under the impression that we were here to talk about communism equating to atheism. And so, if that's not the case, if that's not what this is about, someone tell me the crux of why we are here.
I think we are here to delineate the differences between Christianity, communism, atheism, and capitalism, as I understand it, and why one should accept one over the other.
Under the impression, because the tweet started with SJ saying that atheism equates to communism, and then she says, "Prove me wrong." And so I said, "Fine, then I will prove you wrong," and then. That's what I was under the impression. So,
okay.
Well,
so
then
if it's not that, then I don't know either.
Hold on, everybody.
We had a really long conversation after that tweet.
It sounds
where I
like
said I wanted to clarify my views.
That we're all here. All three of you are here for different reasons. Okay, and
I'm here for the
so
beer.
That's going to present an issue. So what we need to do now is to all get on one page so that we're not in three different directions. Thinking that and answering for that. So if we can agree that what Joshua was saying, that I think that's a more substantive, it'll be a more productive, I think, discussion. If we talk about why you should choose one or the other between the systems.
I think the topic may be more correct me if I'm wrong, because I've been reading these tweets. I've been following along. So I don't want to straw man. I don't want to misquote anybody. But I think, SJ, were you not type arguing somewhere along the lines of not that atheism and communism are synonymous, because I don't think that you're arguing that, but that communism leads to art, to atheism rather than capitalism, which leads to something other than atheism. Is that kind of more your argument? Because you're saying that if you have a communist at state, you're more likely to be an atheist. So therefore, communism and somehow atheism are intertwined in that regards. Is that somewhat what you're going for, what you're trying to just explain on Twitter?
I think – well, I look at this little quote right here from Vladimir Lenin. He says, "Atheism is a natural and inseparable part of Marxism. Of the theory and practice of scientific socialism, our program necessarily includes the propaganda of atheism." So that's what Lenin said. And so there's a relationship. But Marxism, if you look at the Communist Manifesto and you look at item number 22, he's very explicit about his beliefs in atheism and how that relates to Marxism. And the people who have practiced using the Marxist doctrines, the people who've used that, such as Lenin, Stalin, and Mao Zedong, who've built their systems off of that, are also atheists, and they've also purged religion. So it just sort of all goes together. Now, I'm not saying if you're an atheist, that doesn't mean you're a communist by any stretch. There's tons and tons of atheists who are not communists. We've got lots of atheists here in the United States who are not communists. So I'm just saying that if you're in those systems, there's a greater possibility that religion is being purged.
Okay, I just want a real quick clarification, because again, I want to make sure we got you right. Are you saying that communism tends to lead to atheism, or atheism tends to lead to communism? Because there's a huge distinction there, and I think that one's a lot more controversial than the other.
That's a good question.
Are you saying
question.
That atheism? Let me see if I try. Think about that carefully, because I mean that is a very big difference between those two statements. Because if you think that atheism leads to communism, then I think we have a talk that we all could agree that would be interesting to have a conversation on.
Yeah, but only one of them is true, though.
I wouldn't contest that too much, but the second one is contestable, and I think that's what Frustrated Atheist was reading into your tweets. Frustrated Atheist, was that kind of what you were reading when she was tweeting this out, that somehow if you're atheist is more likely to lead into communism for the state?
Like I said, whenever I read it showed as if the two are synonymous. That's the way it read.
I didn't read that. Yeah, I didn't see that with her. She clarified that they're not synonymous in future tweets.
Okay. And that's fine. But we can go down what was it that you said? Atheism leading into communism?
If that's what she's claiming.
I don't think I'd make that claim, but you know, you could go back and wonder, why did Stalin, you know, do what he did? Why did he choose the communist doctrine? Why did he choose Marxism and build off that? It's probably interesting. I don't know enough about the history of Karl Marx or Stalin or Lenin to know exactly what motivated them to follow those doctrines.
I think it would be very interesting. It would be very interesting to understand why Stalin would, since Stalin himself was a Christian and he was going through seminary and everything to be a leader within the Catholic Church, and then went and obtained power instead. So it would be very interesting to figure out why that happened that way.
You know, one thing from history, and I've been studying history for a while, is people use different ideas, such as the church or religion, to propel their own ideological, experiments. I think a lot of the regimes have used Christian imagery at first, and then, you know, when they have their experiment in hand, their civilization going the way that they want, they'll often denounce the church. They'll often denounce Christians, take away individual rights, those things that are implied in the Old Testament and the New Testament. So I think a more important issue we have to grapple with, just to progress the conversation, is the basis. It is the basis of ideas, the basis of humanity, is it materialism, or does it have something to do with ideas? Are we just the product of our DNA, or are there also cultural innovations that have transformed the West? So I think I would much rather talk about that and to progress the conversation.
Okay. Frustrated Atheist, how would you respond to that?
Sorry, I stepped away for a minute. I didn't hear a word he said. My fiance came in. Can you go ahead and repeat that, sir?
Maybe we should let's try to center in on let's center in on a topic here that we can all agree on to move forward here. So we're all on the same page. How about we talk about the cultural impact of either Christianity or atheism on a society? That way, Josh can speak to the historical aspect of it, and that'll give us maybe a starting point to go from here. Because it sounds like we cleared up SJ's tweet. So maybe let's center in on the effects. All right, Joshua, you want to go ahead and
All right. Yeah.
Whenever you're ready.
I want to read to you one little thing. It says Aristotle, he began his philosophy, and he said that it begins with a sense of wonder about the world. And he said the biggest question we can ask is whether about the origin of the universe, about complexity, how things arise. Aristotle once said this: if shipbuilding was in the wood, we would have ships by nature. Things come about by design. And the way we perceive the world through a cultural context of history, filled with church history, filled with theology, that gives us ways to interpret the world where we now have human rights. Back in antiquity, slavery was endemic to civilization. It's only in the West that slavery has been abolished. And it's done that twice. Rodney Stark in his, I think I have the book somewhere around here. Let me see if I have the book right here. The Triumph of Christianity. He talks about this issue, how ideas have consequences, and it's because of these liberal ideas, this classical liberalism that has really shaped humanity and gave people rights. And property rights was a big thing that shaped the development of the West. So was religion.
Okay, I have a question here. How does this topic at all relate to atheism?
I think we
need to clarify this. Go ahead, Sri.
Well, I think what we should talk about maybe our current trends. So if we want to look at what's going on in the world, look at the United States. So about 86% people in the United States identify themselves as theists. We've got a good portion of those. Most of them are Christians. It's something like 78% Christian or something like that. So the United States is sort of an outlier with respect to Western nations right now, because some of the Western nations are trending towards atheism. We have a lot of the European nations right now that have become increasingly what they say is rational or secular, and numerous studies have indicated, so there are these trends, but the foundations upon which the European countries were built over the past millennia has basically been Christian foundations. So we've got Christian universities, major universities founded through Christianity and that kind of thing. So Western societies are still reaping the benefits of the foundations in Christianity.
Okay. Frustrated?
Boy, that got quiet. Wow, dead silence.
Yeah, sorry.
So I have no idea what the hell was just said. But
you want to summarize that?
Let me clarify.
Yes, please.
Do you have a?
Does anybody know why they're?
Do you have a? I don't know if any of y'all have gone to university or other than SJ. And it doesn't make you smart or not. You can get smart in a library with $100 of fines, I guess. But if we're going to think that the university is a good thing, we have to think why it came about, the cultural context of why it came about. And it's because of Christianity why it came about.
What came about?
The university system.
Okay.
The earliest universities started in the 12th century. In the 13th century, the University of Paris, Bologna, and Oxford and Cambridge, these were the earliest universities. They were started by a group called the Scholastic Philosophers, the Scholastic Christians, the schoolmen who argued and grappled with the works of Aristotle, and they weren't inclined to accept everything Aristotle said. You had a mixture of Aristotelian and Platonic ideas and how they interpret with Christianity and what it means. So you had a lot of these things develop around that time in the Middle Ages. It's scholasticism. No matter what you say about the Catholic Church, and I'm not Catholic, it is because of Catholic Christians that the university system arose.
But I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that. But it's 2018, though. We have secular society now. We have secular institutions.
Yes.
Where it came from is interesting. That's historical. Where we are now, that's, I think, more interesting to have a discussion on.
Well, I want to clarify what I was just trying to say, because I think I went over – I think I might have said something where I maybe didn't fill in some of the foundation first that I was talking about. There's a really interesting person called Ronald Engelhardt, and he's out of the University of Michigan. And he has produced over these last couple of decades, he's produced a series of world values surveys. And he's basically noticed some trends in countries away from traditionalism and away from religiosity and towards what he labeled as secular and rational. And so I think if we want to talk about what's going on today, we should talk about that, because that's what's going on right now in European countries. We do have a foundation upon which the countries were built in Christianity, but currently, current trends are leaning towards more liberalism. They're leading towards more socialism. In fact, most of the places in Europe, we've got a lot of social democracies, meaning that they're mixed economies. They've got some private ownership and some public ownership. So that's something going on right now. Now, how does that?
I want to add something about the kids. My students.
Hello?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I know he froze.
He froze.
So let him come back. Again, none of this has to do with the topic. This is all over the place. SJ.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to bring it back to modernity? Let's talk about modern times. Is it advantageous to have a atheistic society over a theistic society as far as our educational system? Because obviously I think you would agree with secularism. You want to see secularism around. You don't want to violate that, correct?
I agree that church and government should be separated, yes.
Okay.
So
you're secularist. Okay. Awesome. So do you want to maybe run the narrative that you're going to promote theism is a better way to have a society than an atheistic society? And forgetting the social political aspect of it, because I don't see how that's intertwined with atheism at all. I just don't. But you're arguing that the theist position is somehow more beneficial to society over an atheistic position. I think that's the core of your argument, if I'm not mistaken.
I think when people feel like there's an external force of accountability that they can't do something in secret and get away with it because there's an external force that is holding them accountable. I think that's very helpful to society. I think it gives people, you know, you're not likely to sneak around. You're not likely to cheat on your spouse. You're not likely to do all these, anything that's even worse, you know, morally egregious sort of activities, because you know that you're going to be held accountable at some point. And I think that's a good foundation for people to believe in. And so I think theism, in and of itself, the idea of a moral force holding you accountable, I think that's really important.
Okay, then can you explain to me how more secular societies tend to have less crime and less everything and more happiness across the board?
I don't think you can make that. I know that they've done, you know, there's a series of different studies. No, there is a study I know what you're pointing to, because there is studies that have shown that some of the Northern European societies tend to be very happy. They also have a lot of social safety nets. And so I think that they've shown in those studies it's not directly related to religiosity per se. It's more related to the fact that they've got a lot of social safety nets. So there's a very strong welfare system. And the people are very wealthy. So you could probably correlate wealth. In fact, I know you can correlate wealth and income to a person's happiness. And those Northern European societies are wealthy.
I don't think you can, because there's still a lot of majority of the people here who are wealthy who are completely and utterly depressed. So I don't see how you can make that correlation.
I actually can make that correlation. If you pull out the World Value Surveys and you do SBSS or you do a statistical package on them, you can directly correlate happiness to income. I mean, there's lots of studies that have done this. Happiness and income are well correlated. Happiness and the feeling that you have enough income is correlated. One of the problems in the United States is we have huge income inequalities between the wealthy and the poor, and that actually makes people you know, in many levels, most people are in the middle class, so that makes people pretty unhappy, and that's why we are a nation of lots of very depressed people. A lot of people are really depressed.
All right, and hold on one second, Frustrated. Let me let Joshua add something on to the end of that real quick. Go ahead, Joshua, get in there.
Well, first of all, I think you're pointing to something, and this is to SJ. I think you're pointing to something by what Jonathan Haidt, I believe he teaches evolutionary psychology. He has said about comparing in the U.S. the difference between income and equality. But I did want to read something to you about the secularization. Actually, two things. It's very short. The secularization thesis came around in 1967 with the scholar, and I want you all to look this up. His name is Peter Berger. He just recently died, but he was a professor in sociology. Anyway, he has recounted his belief as of 2008 in an article from First Things called Secularization Falsified. The founder of the secularization thesis wrote an article in February 2008, Secularization Falsified, and he says, the churches and Christians growing in the global South, and what we're talking about here is Asia, a place that I've lived and taught there before in South Korea, South America, Africa, and especially China are seeing enormous Christian explosions. So, you know, while European and American society might possibly be transforming in their understanding of what Christianity is, well, not so in the global South. The other thing I wanted to read is a quote by the British sociologist. Her name is Grace Davies. She's a sociologist. Here's what she says. What the concept of believing without belonging effectively, I'm not going to read it. She talks about a notion called believing without belonging, that they are so entrenched in a Christian mindset from history that they don't necessarily have to go to church. They have liberalization, the freedom to express a variety of things that aren't necessarily in strict doctrinal conformance to what Christianity fundamentalism is per se, but they're still Christian. When you ask them this in surveys and you ask them a more nuanced question, according to Grace Davies, they are believers without belonging to an official church in the UK.
Let me ask SJ real quick, because SJ, you had mentioned something. You said that you're basically appealing to a utility, that you're saying that if people were more believing, if they were more Christian, they would have accountability. But whatever happened to people like, you know, Ted Haggard, Jim Baker, Swaggart, all these pastors have been busted. They believed in God, but they had no moral, you know, compunction to not do what they did. The entire Catholic Church scandal, the Jehovah's Witness scandal. Obviously, that's not a fair argument to make, that all of a sudden, if you posit that people are going to believe in God, that they're going to somehow have more moral accountability, because we've seen from demonstrable, overwhelming evidence over the years, that's not the case.
Well, actually, you know, you bring up a really good point, and I'll be the first to say there's obviously some people who are, you know, you can identify people in both sides who are morally egregious. And so I would say Jim Baker, for example, is a great example. We even have our prosperity preachers. I mean, are they following exactly what Jesus said to do, the prosperity preacher? So we do have, yeah, you're right. And of course, those Catholic priests who did that stuff, I mean, why did I leave the Catholic Church 20 years ago? Is because of those Catholic priests. They've been getting away with it, and it seems like it's not, you know, it's terrible. They're going to be judged more harshly, and they know that if they actually read their Bible. But here's the thing. I'm not saying, and I'll never say this, I'm not saying that atheists are not moral. I think that there are many very moral atheists. There are many atheists who are better parents than I am, for example. They're doing a great job with their kids. I'm not making that claim. I'm just saying that if you take a nation of people, you know, 330 million people here in the United States, you look at a full nation, and you have most people with the view that they'll be held externally accountable, I think that makes a safer society in general. Now, of course, we do have examples on both sides of people doing the wrong things. You know, like I'll name the prosperity preachers in the Catholic Church, and I can also look at the other side with Stalin and Mao and those people. My point is, I think as a whole, when you take the entire world, you take billions of people on the planet who feel like they're going to be held externally accountable, I think that's it's just going to make for a safer society in general.
Or they become Buddhist and just be really, you know, mellow and not have a God belief and just realize, hey, don't do bad things to other people. Right?
But,
you know, and that actually brings up another pretty good point.
Remember this, Buddhism is not what transformed the world and brought us individual rights and private property. That was Christianity, with its belief in a natural world that could be discoverable by
again,
people
and
laws.
I disagree. Let's keep
yeah, the discover laws.
That's like saying slavery had slavery was good because it gave us the cotton industry. Therefore, we should bring back slavery because, you know, it's good for cotton picking. That's the kind of reasoning that you're using. Just because something was advantageous back then for cultural reasons doesn't mean it holds true today. You're arguing from past.
I'm not saying just advantageous in a temporal way. I'm saying we would not even have individual rights if it wasn't for this Christian mindset that showed that we are created equal in the image of God.
They used the Bible to justify slavery at some point. So I mean,
they did use the Bible to justify. We're not all smart of that. I would like.
Please don't forget that the early abolitionist tracts were from the Quakers and from a number of other Christian denominations. During the 1830s and 40s and 50s. This is why
we're going to have to mute you. Okay, I'm sorry to have to do that. Okay, but we're going to have to mute you if you can't follow what I'm saying. This is not a free for all. Like, you can't just butt in whenever you want to and say whatever you want to. There's an order to this, and I called on Frustrated Atheist.
All right.
I said your name about 20 different times, so you have to stop when I do that. Otherwise, we're going to mute you. You're not going to win out on that, okay? Let's just understand that right now, all right? I hate when people talk over each other. I want it orderly so that everybody can follow along, and Frustrated Atheist hasn't spoken in a while, so we're going to give him a chance to talk about what has gone up to this point, and then we will give you all the time that you need. All right, frustrated atheist.
All right, yeah. So what I was going to say is the fact that we've had slavery happening ever since the Bronze Age and beyond. And all of this has been happening in the presence of religion. And it wasn't until we got until the 1800s where finally someone said, at least here in the States, someone said, here, this is wrong. And someone before that said this was wrong. Now, I'm not saying that either one of them people, either one of them were Christian or atheist, but slavery has been heavily endorsed in the Bible, has been given, it even gives you a whole entire list of what you can and cannot do with a slave, who cannot be slaves, and how long certain slaves can be slaves for, or and then, of course, there's a loophole with those slaves that you can trick them into becoming slaves for the rest of their lives. And all of these other different things. That slavery was not in any way, shape, or form, you know, abolished because Christians said, oh, we're all equal. As a matter of fact, there was quite a few people who sat there while being God-fearing Christians, sat there and said, my Bible says that you are below me, and this is why. And they even gave slaves heavily doctored Bibles for just them to have, so that way they know that you must obey your master, and that when your master tells you to do something, you have to do it, and that your master owns you. So this is what you cannot in any way, shape, or form say that Christianity has throughout history let us know that we're all created equal, because they have it hasn't.
Okay, now Josh or SJ, you may respond.
I'll let Joshua, because he was about to talk about slavery.
I just wanted to say I'm sorry for earlier.
That's all right.
Alvin Schmidt, in his How Christianity Changed the World and How Is God a Moral Monster, they talk specifically about this issue. There are legitimate scholars that go into these issues. There is something called progressive revelation, and that says we, just like science or just like education, with the growth of wisdom and the longer that people have to be in groups and to contemplate these issues and to reflect on theology and the nature of God and human rights. And by the way, it's according to our founders, it was very hard to talk about human rights without also talking about responsibilities. Indeed, Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, these anti-federalists against this big government picture of the world, they thought that slavery would eventually go away. But of course it didn't, because of technological innovations. And again, that's because of private property. Something called the cotton gin of 1794 actually helped slavery go. There were a lot of compromises in the 1820s with the Missouri Compromise and the Compromise of 1850 that kept this going, that people did not want to fight this moral fight against slavery and kill it once and for all. So yes, there were people, some people in the South, most of them did not own slaves, but there were people in the South that thought that they did have a right to secede from the Union. But the Civil War happened because Abraham Lincoln would not let them secede from the Union. And under Jefferson's and Madison's theory, slavery wouldn't went away by its own if they would have. But be that as it may, it was indeed the Quakers and a number of others that wrote these abolitionist tracts and did much of the work that would abolish slavery. And it was also William Wilberforce in Britain that did this before. In 1807, slavery was abolished in Britain long before America. You see, ideas do have consequences. Slavery has been endemic to society, but with the availability of progressive revelation, that we getting a more sophisticated understanding of rights and who we are, and equality, that eventually got rid of slavery, and it's because of Christianity, and this has only happened in the West.
Okay. I think that's fair. I want to say something that I think everybody would agree to. I think that we can all agree that there, and I'll agree with, I think that one of the points that Frustrated Atheist was saying was basically that, you know, we certainly have some moral monsters in our past. We have moral monsters on both sides of the table. You could certainly look to the people who were slave owners who were trying to use the Bible as a means to justify it, and they clearly weren't even reading the Bible and exactly what the inscriptions were for people to treat slaves like Onesimus, and Paul treated Onesimus in the book. I think it's the book of Timothy. So, but basically, the bottom line is that I think we can all look at the ideals and the universal moral principles and say that you know, following, treating. I think we could all agree with the golden rule: treat others as you would have yourself be treated.
Frustrated.
And I think that's okay. Sort of the bottom line with what Christ was saying.
Okay, so to address what SJ just said, I was saying that we have moral monsters, yes, but the thing was is that most of these people throughout history who were justifying slavery were using the Bible to justify slavery. This was not
right,
something
they were
that was...
They were using the Bible in a mistaken way. So...
They were not misusing it in any way, shape, or form. They were using the parts that fit their narrative, just like everybody who ever uses the Bible for any justification ever uses it to fit their narrative. You can find verses that show that it's against slavery. You can find verses more often than not that show that it's for slavery. You can find it in every aspect of the Bible, no matter what the situation is. It doesn't matter. You can sit there and tell me the verse of Timothy where Jesus had sat there and said whatever to the slaves. But the thing is that you're still going to find people who use this Bible to justify the slavery.
Let me give you one basic example of why these people were fundamentally incorrect. And the reason is because it says very specifically in the Bible that you are not to kidnap slaves. And that's exactly how the slave trade was built in the United States. So even the people who were benefiting from those who kidnapped slaves would be held accountable according to the Bible, and they were subject to capital punishment.
No.
So that is something very...
One second, frustrated. Let her finish her thought.
I apologize.
Go ahead, Ashley.
I'm just saying that there. Yes, we have people who are misusing the Bible through the years, and I think that's it's awful. And you and I can both agree to that. I mean, it's not appropriate to grab a book and try to cherry pick it to say that, you know, my book's perfect, and I'm going to find this one little a line in the middle of a phrase, and I'm going to say that I can mistreat you and I can beat you up, and we can kidnap slaves, and then ignore what it very clearly says in the Bible about the treatment of slaves, and looking to the way that Paul basically said Onesimus is a brother and he's an equal.
Okay, frustrated.
Okay. So one thing that you have mistaken is that all of the transatlantic slave route was pure stealing, and no, it wasn't. A lot of times the Aborigines did give their people up willingly. They traded their people a lot of times as well. So I mean, you can't say that they just strictly went over there and said, okay, I have guns here. I'm going to kill y'all who tried to stop me from taking your people. They went over there and traded willingly. And so you can't say that they sat there and did that at all. There's no argument for that. But again, they use the Bible just like everybody else uses the Bible for their own means. You can't, and to say, oh, well, they're misusing it. How are they misusing it? If they are reading it straight from the Bible and saying that this is my justification because my Bible says so, then you have no basis to say that they are wrong about that.
You don't exegete properly, frustrated. You don't, you're a bad exegeter.
Let me clarify something, SJ. I think what he's trying to say is the fact that you say that it's being misused. However, rather than just coming out and saying slavery is wrong, or you should not own slaves, or you should not, you know, owning people is bad, it instead gives instructions on how they're to be treated, therefore, by proxy, condoning it, not coming out and saying this is wrong. You know, that's the ultimate point. The fact that it doesn't explicitly say owning people is wrong, instead it gives you instructions on how to treat those that you have in captivity. Therefore, essentially saying it's okay, but look, as long as you're going to own people, you need to at least treat them this way. So I think that's where we're at with that. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
Looks like Joshua might have a response.
If I could, yeah, thank you so much. I don't think that's right. Looking at the Bible, it's often reporting things that aren't in good light. And I think that's an argument why we can trust its authenticity in the Old Testament, that they're not cherry-picking and trying to make it look as good as they can. But there were regulations as compared to the neighboring civilizations, which I do teach also, like Mesopotamia and Egypt and the Indus River Valley, not to mention Chinese civilization. There were so many other civilizations where anything was going. You could do anything to these slaves. But to see that there are regulations in the Old Testament show that progressive revelation is starting to work. Now, it works down through the ages, down through the first century, the intertestamental time, from the last book of the Old Testament to the New Testament, down through the Middle Ages, down through the Renaissance and Enlightenment to today, people reflecting on what natural theology is and what natural rights are and where they come from. The originators of what natural law is were Christians reflecting on what the nature of God is, saying that, or seeing that we were created in the image of God, that makes us fair, makes us equal. That was a major force in international law and in our own law tradition in America, which traces back to British law in the Blackstone commentaries. So I think there's more to it, that it doesn't explicitly condemn slavery in the Old Testament. It does it in a more profound way through stories, through a narrative. Just looking at it, you have to look at the whole picture, not just the trees. And this is something I try to get to my kids also. You have to look at the whole context in the whole historical milieu, which is, you know, which that information is being conveyed. I'm done.
Okay, frustrated.
So in other words, you can't look at the fact that these are laws that were given to man on how to treat the slaves because of reasons. Like how exactly can we not see that this is the Bible condoning slavery by giving them laws on how and who are slaves and what you can and cannot do with them? How are we to look at this differently than that? And this is a document of people who are being told how they are to treat other human beings, and not just saying, hey, human beings, the owning of human beings is morally wrong, so don't do it.
Go ahead.
Can I reply? Okay. I think you're kind of playing the postmodern game and not taking history, theological history, as significant. When you take a wooden, literal view of biblical interpretation and say, if it doesn't explicitly condone it, well, then it's not from God. Not only are you presupposing some moral standard that says slavery is objectively evil, you're also playing the postmodernist game in looking at just the trees, the particular examples, and not taking a step back and looking at the whole woods. Daniel Dennett understands this problem when he came up, he talked about something called, and I want you all to look this up, called the frame the frame problem in psychology. It was where artificial intelligence, they tried to get artificial intelligence systems to do certain things, but they could not because it was far too complex, and it took value systems, not just us understanding something by reason, but it had to change a person's culture, and that takes years to get them to see and to understand something. You have to change a person's heart, not just their intellect. So to condemn the biblical text because it doesn't explicitly condemn slavery is not looking at the whole context and not taking theological history seriously.
I think the argument would be, though, if you're going to default to a deity for some kind of moral guidance, if that deity doesn't have the wherewithal to state very clearly that such a thing is an egregious act, I can't say that's a very moral God.
And that's what I was going to say.
The first three commandments are the commandments that people take away the most, that kind of outline how you're supposed to be as a person. The first three are about not having any gods before him. They're about him. Nowhere in that does it say anything about the owning of people, and you would think that that would be a pretty high on the list of things. It by not outright saying it condones slavery by just telling people how they should monitor, treat, how long they can be slaves. It maps out slavery in black and white, basically.
Can I go one last time on this?
Let SJ go because she hadn't gone the past couple times, and then we'll let you wrap up. No hit. Frustrated.
I'll just say, we look at the Bible as a whole. We're kind of supposed to take all 66 books and put them together and look at them for the overall message that the entire Bible gave. And I think that the best overall message is just looking at the example of Jesus Christ. And he gave us two commandments: love God above all else, and love our neighbors as ourselves. And if we're going to follow his commandments of and even his example of how he treated people and how he was working in the pits of society, he was helping some of the lowest in society. He elevated prostitutes. He elevated people from the lowest parts of society, tax collectors, and that. I think just looking at his example, we should emulate that and emulate the entire reason why the Bible was written in the first place and what occurred with him. So I think I'd go away from trying to focus on, onesie twosie passages from the Old Testament and look at the entire book as its full message on Jesus Christ.
So what is God's stance on slavery then? Does he condone it or condemn it?
He regulated it during the time of
worship. I think we understand through progressive revelation. But
the question is, either God accepts it as good.
I think
God does not accept it as good, and he's against it.
Oh, God does not accept it as good, Steve, but he regulated it. God didn't accept divorce.
One second. Let me get the question out first. So okay. God regulates slavery, but in no time does he condemn it then. Why is that? Why would a morally just God, if he wants us to understand how we act normatively, why would he not just say, instead of regulating, and say, hey, guys, don't do this. This is bad.
Regulating is like condoning, because if the government says... Let's take marijuana, for example, all right? If the government comes in and says, we're not going to say that, marijuana is completely legal, but we're going to regulate it. We're going to put restrictions on it. We're going to put taxes on it. That is the government condoning the use of marijuana. I mean, there's no
doubt
that. If you regulate it, you condone it.
Otherwise, that's exactly
not condone it. And mm-hmm.
If I could reply, it does seem that when you only take a particular passage out of the context of the whole theological history and how these ideas have shaped history. Now, if you're going to say, the Bible should have said it. Perhaps the people weren't ready to hear that. Perhaps in their cultural context, they weren't ready to hear that. And it took the evolution and progression through many innovations, cultural innovations, for them to be in a way
ready to hear the prepared
God,
for the
shrimp it's his
or
people.
Mixed fabric. They were ready to hear that you couldn't eat shrimp or mixed fabric.
Yeah.
They weren't ready to hear that you don't own people. But they were ready to hear that you shouldn't wear mixed fabric or eat shrimp.
Exactly.
That makes no sense. That makes zero sense.
It makes no sense. Sorry,
when did God care about what people were ready to hear? That's my question. When did God ever care about
what
people were ready to hear?
The same God who will sit there and says, all these people are being immoral, let me kill them with a flood, then turns around and also says, oh, hey, guess what? I can't tell them no, slavery is bad because they're not ready for that.
Yeah, it frustrated. It's kind of like, hey, I'm going to wipe out all the people because they're immoral. But you know what? I didn't tell them what morality was. I didn't tell them what they should do to be moral. How does that follow? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what kind of just God. How is that? How is that merciful?
If God
doesn't tell
reply,
people what's moral, what's not?
Please.
If I can reply. I can reply. Okay. Well, I think God is communicating these ideas, and not just the Ten Commandments, but communicating more profound ideas than just the Ten Commandments through the historical progress. I don't think the message of God, what he's trying to communicate, is final. If we just look at the Old Testament, or if we just look at a particular passage or a particular chapter or a particular book, I think we have to look at the whole totality of what's going on here. To condemn slavery, maybe they wouldn't have been ready to hear that message. As for the flood, these people were sinful and practicing bestiality. If you're gonna take the Christian message seriously, God had every right to do that, to wipe out a lot of mankind. I, however, believe it was a local flood. I don't believe it was a worldwide flood. That's my particular interpretation. But I don't see how we can, on the backs of pure reason, say that God was not in a position to know. I think what you're doing is, when you go to these particular passages, you're doing what Kant said. You're playing this postmodernist game, and I hope we do go there, because we look at these things, like slavery being evil, through the totality of a church history that shows that it really is evil. The cultural milieu, the very fact that they were willing to regulate slavery, shows that a progressive revelation was on its way to being began. And it reached its completion. Well, I don't think it's totally reached its completion, but we can see a lot of these things are condemned through the historical progress process.
Are you hearing? Are you hearing anything that you're saying out loud? Hold on, everybody stop for just a second. Are you hearing what you're saying out loud? Like, I wonder if you understand some of the things that you're saying.
Well, I do think that's a little
game,
rude.
Hold on, it may be rude, but it's honest, okay? Because what you're saying is that we're playing some postmodern game. We're not playing a postmodern game. What we're doing is we're laying out what a book says that claims to have the moral standard by which all people should follow. And it seems to me that when pointed out that things like slavery existed and God condoned it, you can't bring yourself to admit that. You can't. Listen, that's what I'm saying. You will run around a bush and chase some backwards theory about what it means.
I think you're trying to convince yourself now.
Listen, look, this is what I'm talking about.
Let me reply.
Do you understand? Hold on, I'm not finished yet. Listen to me. We've gone through this before. I will let you reply when I'm done, but as long as my mouth's moving, I'm still getting a thought out. So I would appreciate it if you would not interrupt me. Now, what I'm doing is I'm pointing out the contradictions that are in a book that claims to have the moral standard. And what you are doing is you're dancing around with useless terms and made up theories and principles that don't have any application to what we're talking about. So what I would like from you is a straightforward answer. The first one of today, on, do you think God either condones or does not condone slavery? And that is either, listen, that is either a yes or a no question. It requires no BS explanation. So did God
no qualifier
or condemn slavery?
No qualifier. So you're looking at one instance. There's a more sophisticated answer. Look,
no,
you can't
no,
simply
no,
look
no,
at.
Wait. Hold
on.
With
all due respect,
this is a binary. This is a dichotomy here. Either God does or He does not. There is no other possibilities. This is basic classical logic, and we're asking you: okay. Does God condone slavery? Or is it the case that He doesn't? So if I give you the proposition, God condones slavery, is that proposition true or false?
No.
I don't think
God
does
condone
not slavery.
Okay, so then you, it, see,
now,
you
let
can't
me,
answer
me,
without
can,
qualifier.
Let me finish.
There you go.
If I, you got, let me finish. If you look at the whole historical process through what progressive revelation is, that was the best that they could do. With God working with their limitations of knowledge and their limitations of speech and what they were ready in a position to understand. That's the best that they could do. Now, okay. I believe our society has progressed since then because of progressive revelation, and it progressed through the centuries because of, most especially because of Jesus. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I'm not looking at this through one point of reference and then making a determination. I'm taking a step back in humility, and I would ask y'all to do this too, and then making a determination whether Christianity can be credibly believed when there's a book in the Old Testament that doesn't specifically condemn slavery. Perhaps there are God is showing us through the historical process in trying to change our hearts, not just our minds, on the proposition that slavery is evil. Maybe it's a question of the heart. Maybe it's a more profound question than what you're offering.
Or perhaps
okay,
God
can I
condone slavery, and He's not somebody that is worthy of worship for all of eternity for that very reason. Now, there are more reasons. But to allow a group of people in any time period to suffer in slavery just because He didn't feel the people were ready at that particular time to hear that you shouldn't own His creation is preposterous and outrageous. And it's ludicrous to even put forth that kind of narrative. All right, frustrated atheist.
Can I build on that?
Yes,
okay.
No, hold on. No, because I've been waiting here. Okay, so I have three questions. That's it, three questions. Is your God all-knowing, all-loving, and all-powerful?
Yes, I believe
yes.
so.
Is your God where we get our morals from?
Yes, He's a standard
yes.
against which we judge morals.
Okay, so with those two questions answered in the affirmative, then what you have now is a God who back then could have said, knowing how everything is going to play out, because He's all-knowing, He could have said, hey, guys, owning other human beings is wrong. This has nothing to do with my point of view and where I sit morally-wise. This has everything to do with the fact that this God is all-knowing, is all-powerful, all-loving, and so He can, and He's also where we are supposed to get our morals from, and He says, no, you can own slaves, but this is how you're going to do it. Instead of just flat out saying, slavery is morally wrong, do not own slaves.
Can I build on this? I want to repeat something.
Go ahead.
I want to repeat something that you said, Joshua, because I think that one of the points that Joshua was making, I don't think that it really... I think that you guys might not have realized what's going on. So one of the things he was pointing out is in society back in those times, the Bible is a historical textbook that basically gave us a history of what happened back in those times. And in societies, in all societies, the major societies, including in places like India and China, all over the Roman Empire, all through history, they were using slaves. So for God to basically say to regulate that practice, it was a very common practice, and it was the foundation upon which they built their economies. It's awful. Yes, I agree, because we can look back at that with our in a historical lens, and we can judge it against the atrocities of antebellum slavery.
But it's okay for money.
And I also wanted to clarify something else. People who were slaves back then oftentimes did this upon themselves. They decided that they wanted to be a slave under someone for a while to be able to live. They were given quarters to live in and that kind of thing, and they would work for a while, and then they would, after 7 years, they would...
That's not necessarily slavery.
You don't decide to be a slave.
You're confusing indentured servitude with slavery. Come on. Nobody says, hey, I'm going to be your slave.
Hold on.
I'm trying to find every explanation other than what's staring us right in the face. And that is slavery.
Yeah, I agree.
I think what's staring you in the face, I think you're simplifying it to such a degree. And that's why I don't think you're seeing the complexity and the nuances of this issue.
It is simple.
Because it can be simplified. Yeah, but SJ, I mean, granted, if you're using the argument that after 7 years, if they're giving a wife and they had kids, and they'd say, okay, you know what, I don't want to leave my master. I love my master, and I will stay with him, and they drive an awl through their ear and tack them to the door, and they can keep their kids, because if not, if he leaves, the wife and the kid stays with the slave master. Then at that point, if you want to argue they're still being a slave, I would have to still disagree, because that's coercion. Yes, they're saying, yes, we will still be a slave, but under duress. And that's still, to me, slavery. Would you agree?
If the slave decided that he wanted to remain a slave, they were supposed to go see a city member and have the city member agree and have that slave say in front of the person, yes, I want to still remain a slave. So there was that, and I agree with you. Mm-hmm. But I think we've kind of gone down on a tangent. But I think that we're going on a tangent here. I wanted to say one last thing with respect to your idea of regulation and condoning something. And that was what Jesus did in the New Testament when the Pharisees basically asked him, they said, well, what do you think of divorce? Jesus said, unless there's examples of someone cheating on somebody, that divorce is not allowed. And he said, well, then how come you allowed Moses and, you know, during Moses' time, people were able to get divorced? That didn't mean that God ever condoned divorce. That means that God basically offered a way to regulate it. He did not like it, but he basically said that because the way that the hearts were during Moses' time, God granted them the ability to divorce. So,
but the issue if I can reply to someone,
if God is all knowing and all our morals come from God, that doesn't mean that we can't discover morality through other means that God is the ultimate foundation of. We can discover morality through common sense principles. By the way, I hope we get to these common sense principles of Thomas Reed and common sense realism that inspired the the foundation of America, the founding, and Jonathan Witherspoon and so forth. I want to go into that later. But if God is all-knowing, I wonder why God did not teach Moses differential calculus or something other like that. Maybe people weren't in a position to know that.
Joshua, just stop.
I think God let us have free will.
That's just one of the most bizarre arguments I've ever heard in my life. And I've been doing this a long time. That's just bizarre. So many different levels. You're actually trying to conflate calculus with basic human morality and how to treat people. Are you out of your mind?
This is the point. This is the point. This is what it does to you. Okay. You will not just admit the simple answer, and that is that he condoned slavery. You're willing to run around every excuse and excuses that I've never heard before in my life with bringing up calculus. It's bizarre.
Well, I don't know if you read theology. Maybe that might be the reason why you haven't heard these explanations. I don't know. I'm trying to give you a more sophisticated answer than what you normally get.
Look, that is not a sophisticated answer by any means. It's a bullshit. Look over here. Don't look at what it really says. Look over here, and nobody's falling for it here. Like you can spout off all of these. It's laughable. I mean, what you're doing is laughable. I just want to tell you, it's laughable.
Let me ask you something, to be frank.
Sure.
Oh, rats. I apologize right then. It just went out of my mind. I'm sorry, SJ. I'm sorry. I forgot what I was just going to say, sir.
Well, I think that we all, I'm trying to figure out, I'm trying to piece together, because I forgot how this occurred, how we went from talking about communism and atheism and all that stuff to slavery. How did that even happen? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but it's a good thing that it did.
Just a natural development.
To me, it speaks volumes. I mean, it's black and white.
Well, maybe your mind is made up and you're looking at theology in only one way and not a more profound way that theology can be.
There's nothing profound about
the centuries.
I don't care what your overall message is. If you at any point condone the owning of people and the way they were treated, then that screws up your entire message. Like, no amount of good works is ever going to rectify the justification of owning people and treating people like they are less than human. Period. End of discussion. And the fact that you make excuses for that is disgusting.
Especially if you're going to come from especially if you're going to come from some kind of objective standard. Now, I disassociate from the objective subjective argument that much, because I don't think meta ethics have a damn thing to do with how we should treat people. That would be normative, right? Mm-hmm. So, but if you're going to claim somehow there's something that is always going to be wrong, if there's a moral proposition that is the case that is always true, that is bad to do something, right? It's wrong to do something as an objective standard, right? Then how could you say that slavery is ever going to be good if God somehow condones it? And he is condoning it by regulating it. I think that's a fair argument to make. If you regulate something, you're tactically, by some tacit admission, saying that you're condoning it, right? But you're now, SJ says that God doesn't condone slavery, and there's a problem there.
I don't think God is in fact condoning it. I don't. I think this is a document, inspiration, where God is working in the lives of individuals, and they're doing the best that they can with the limited amount of knowledge of God that they do. And I think that limited amount of knowledge of God that they do have gave them the resources to regulate it. But through the centuries, we have a more profound and theologically sophisticated understanding of what God and equality and rights and responsibilities are. So now we can look back through the historical process, which has been colored with, you know, lenses, colored with theology and covered with Jesus and morality and things like that. So we look at this through a whole different perspective than what was going back then.
I got to ask this question. Please let me ask this question. Is slavery a sin?
Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay, so we should God allowed sin?
We should not enslave
a
person.
How did God allow sin? If God is against sin, why did he allow sin? Is God supposed to be against sin?
Why did he raise it?
He allowed people to. I mean, he didn't have anything. He did normally. If he's the objective standard, he's going to tell people what sin is and what is sinful. In this case, he's allowing sin. He's like, go for it. Do your thing. You don't see a contradiction,
Steve and Kyle.
I don't know. Well, yes. let me answer that.
Hold on.
I've been reading.
Frustrated atheist. Yes. What? Hold on.
I just want to let y'all know that, Steve and Kyle, that I'm completely against y'all killing anyone. But after this, I'm going to send y'all instructions on how to do it. Okay?
That's basically what God did.
That really progressed the dialogue.
That's exactly what God did. Here is a how to do this.
Yeah,
that's exactly what your God says.
Yeah. I don't condone it, but if you're going to do it, here's how you're supposed to do it.
Steve, what I've been reading recently is a book, another book by Rodney Stark called Discovering God, how it goes through the various beliefs and the various history and talks about how these things originated. I think through the historical process again. I hate to keep going over this, but if you just look at reality, let's say we just look at reality or one historical event really up close, like a high photograph lens, we're only going to see certain things, certain details. If we take a step back and keep taking a step back, we're going to see more of a context. Similar to as we step back and look at a picture, we're going to see the whole forest and not just some of the particular trees in the forest. Mm-hmm. So maybe there was an overall plan rather than just making a propositional statement that slavery is evil that we could, you know, rationally understand. Maybe to condemn slavery or have slavery eventually condemned, maybe it takes something far more profound.
He condemned.
Let me give you a better
things.
Analogy. Let me give you a better analogy. Okay, you have a pristine, what you think is a pristine ham sandwich, right? And as you look at that ham sandwich, one slice of the bread is molded and hard as a rock. Now, even though you've taken a step back and you've seen the whole sandwich, the fact that that moldy piece of bread on that sandwich makes it uneatable. It's the same thing. Slavery is mold on your religion sandwich. And are you still going to eat it knowing that that mold's there? No, you're not.
I think we've been talking about slavery now for at least a half hour, and we're way off topic from where we started. Is there any way we could go back?
I doubt it now.
So, I mean, I think if I mean, just from my perspective and from Joshua's perspective, I think the idea is if we're to follow the Bible, we're to follow Jesus' example, and I mentioned that before. So,
well, yeah, I mean, and why doesn't Jesus' example supersede the Old Testament?
Jesus confirms the Old Testament because he says, "I have not come to change the old law." He upholds the Old Testament. He doesn't disavow it.
Oh, no.
The entire point of this conversation.
He came to fulfill
the... No one ever says...
No. No one he came to fulfill the Old Testament.
Right.
He said the Old Testament.
That's what Jesus said, actually.
Okay, what does that mean? Did he disavow the Old Testament?
No. He fulfilled 330 prophecies in the Old Testament.
He said these commandments boil down to two other commandments. That if you don't look at it in just a superficial way, you look at it through two commandments. Love the Lord your God with all your heart. And what was the second commandment, CJ? I apologize.
It's love the Lord thy God with your heart, soul, and mind, and treat others as you shall be treated, as you would want to be treated.
Fulfillment of the Old Testament. Thank you, sir.
But the thing is whenever I ask this question, what I was saying was when the person asked him this question, which ones are the most important to follow? And that's why I pulled them down. It wasn't due with, do away with some of these or whatever. He said, this is what they all say, and they're all worth following.
Yeah.
So, in other words, the entire Old Testament is worth following still.
Modern skeptic, in my opinion, is looking at it through a lens of superficiality and not really taking what Jesus says in summarizing it in those two commandments. Maybe, possibly, they're not taking it in a sophisticated way. That's my answer.
The spin that you are putting on this is incredible.
Yeah, you're basically saying that everything you've had so far, you have a lot of appeal to authority, I've noticed. None of us have appeal to authority. I can spew out names just like anybody else, right?
I quote.
You quote. Quoting is not an effective means for argumentation, okay? Now, I understand you should quote every so often. When you're going into a debate, if you want to lead an initial quote, right, that sets the tone, I'm all for that. If you want to close with one. If your entire argument is based and contingent upon other people's writings, then the person you're having a discussion with, the interlocutor, in this case, you know, like frustrated atheist, you're not having a discussion or dialectic with him. He's having a dialectic with these people that wrote these books. This is why we avoid having conversations.
I think I'm having
argumentum ad to what somebody else
wrote. I was having a discussion with all three of y'all. Y'all were leveling charges, and I was trying my best, and I'm saying very well-read and researched individuals that study and teach on this subject see that there's more nuance than what this infidel atheist approach to the Old Testament shows.
Let me throw the bullshit flag. We have a lot of atheists with PhDs in biblical scholarship, a lot that we deal with. Now, how do you reconcile that with your narrative? Because they're not this uninformed, uneducated infidel that you make them out to be.
Okay.
And they disagree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I should not say that. They can certainly have credentials.
You have different positions. We all agree positions can differ. That's why we have
positions. Yeah. Yes, you're right. You're right. We can differ intellectually, but I'm saying that there is an intellectual viewpoint that can still believe that God is holy, good, and he's all powerful and all knowing, and still believe in progressive revelation and that he regulated slavery. I still think that's possible. I think slavery is a sin, but I think it's the whole historical process to today through our cultural innovations and institutions shaped by theology that shows it to be sinful, not just a particular historical example from the past.
I'm not going to disagree with you too much on that. I mean, there's a reasons why we can look at things either in modernity or historically, but that doesn't negate the points that Kyle is making in regards to, if this is what you argue, these are the natural consequences that follow from that, right? Now, you could try to be an apologist and try to rationalize them away somehow, but some of the methods you've used to do so don't seem very convincing by any stretch of imagination, and I'd actually go on a limb and say they're pretty bad, even for a well-educated college person. You're obviously articulate. You're obviously well-educated. Not going to diminish that, right? You're not a dumb person, right? But a bad argument is a bad argument, and I think that what's happening is, and I'm going to be objective here, when people watch these kind of things, they want to see how the argument unfolds. They want to see who's making a better argument. You could be the most intellectually intelligent, educated person in the world, but if they think that you're making a bad argument and they call you on it, that kind of needs to be addressed, right? And that's kind of what happened initially with SJ and Frustrated right. Atheist. They thought that each other were having bad arguments, and yet I think they were kind of talking past each other. I don't think SJ was making the claims she was making, and I will go out of my way to make sure we don't strawman somebody, right? So that's kind of the reason why we have these discussions. But thank you for letting me.
Yeah, I want to say I appreciate it. I hope we can move on to another subject to keep the argument progressing. However, I do believe that a lot of these issues are deeper than just surface level portraits. For example, you know, history is different from science, as you know. No matter what we do, we're not going to be able to repeat the Battle of Waterloo, are we? It's just a different nature. One goes with repeatable objects in us trying to learn about science. One goes with the individual particular historical examples. And to understand the full history, we have to take a step back and look at the overall cultural context of which these events happened.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to conflate history with science, so I agree with you on that. So we have a mutual agreement we can kind of like move on from.
Well, I think that shows that maybe we should be very mindful of condemning the Old Testament because of a particular passage.
Well, I don't condemn anything. What I do is I analyze the arguments. So I'm analyzing what am I reading, what is being put forth here, and I like to have personally consistent positions. Anybody who's known me for a long time will tell you I want my epistemology to be sound. I want to have positions that are coherent. I want to have a coherent framework. Do I succeed in that always? No, none of us ever do. We always have tensions of different positions that somehow don't mix, right? I mean, for example, like when SJ had mentioned fascism relating to Marxism, like my cackles on my hair, on the back of my neck kind of like stood up because I'm like, wait, fascism, if I understand it, is actually against Marxism. But you know, when we have philosophical type discussions and theological talk, it falls under philosophy. You're going to have positions that are not always consistent, but the goal is to try to be, and that's what I'm, you know, as a person in these in discussions, try to suss out. I want people to have a coherent framework, and that's when we kind of pounce and go, "Wait a minute, you're saying one thing, but over here you're saying something else." This is why when we're talking about God and having an argument that, you know, God is the objective moral standard. Okay, and by the way, I'm not against objective morality, just FYI. But if God is going to be the objective standard, then he has to place that position that that slavery is wrong from the get-go. There's no wrong. It's right sometimes and wrong some other times. Because
you're talking like this slavery part is just the only bad aspect of it. It's littered through the entire book examples of where that moral standard isn't hit at all. In fact, it dips below what average people here on Earth would consider moral. Truth be told, people have better moral standards than the one that's supposed to be instructing them on how to act. And it just doesn't look very well when you try to go around what's obvious to everyone else. And what's obvious to everyone else is, or what should be obvious, let me put you this way, you should never in any circumstance own people. That's never a good thing, whether a God does it, whether a human does it. And so the fact that a God condoned it.
Well, that notion of the human rights has really come through the West in capitalism, that it liberated more people. And when we talk about theology and start taking it seriously and really reflecting on it, that's when the natural law theory came about. Now, I believe that God, as you say, Steve, is the progenitor of objective moral values and duties. But us discovering it through a particular passage or how someone's limited understanding, as you know, the people who wrote the Bible were inspired. God did not dictate word for word. They were inspired. So he is working with these limitations that people have, but also working through the whole historical process. So I can still believe that objective moral values exist and they reside in God, but that slavery is objectively wrong. And I don't think that there's any problem with that. And I do agree with you on humility. Now, I've been talking so much. You can go ahead and talk, SJ.
Yeah, I just have one last question. In regards to that, I mean, if you hold to the fact that God is the objective moral standard, would you say that you would hold a divine command theory? And if you do hold a divine command theory, do you not recognize that divine command theory is a form of ethical subjectivism in that case? Because it's contingent upon the mind of God? In which case, how is it objective?
Yeah, I believe God exists necessarily.
That would require
I do
an
believe
actual
in, and
you would have to demonstrate
I believe
that God
exists necessarily. That's what I believe.
But you believe that, but that has not been demonstrated, right? You agree that there's no logical necessity to posit a deity.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're totally right. I haven't demonstrated that, and I do read Immanuel Kant, The Critique of Pure and Practical Reason, and David Hume, and Thomas Reed, and Common Sense Realism. I do study philosophy and have been for about 20 years and would love to go into these issues, but I'm saying we need humility, and before we start condemning the Old Testament because of a particular interpretation that, you know, we have or Richard Dawkins,
we need honesty.
You know, celebrates in one of his books, I think we need to be mindful before celebrating that one particular interpretation. Maybe there's a whole historical context behind it.
Sure, but how does that answer my question?
We need honesty.
How does that answer my question about ethical subjectivism? If you're saying that, and it goes in the Euthyphro dilemma. I mean, if you want to, we're not going to get that deep into it right now. But I'm just asking you, how do you reconcile an objective moral framework with the fact that it's contingent upon the mind of God, which would fall under ethical subjectivism, which divine command theory actually does, right? So, I mean, it's a hard question. I understand that, but if people are going to be positing these types of things, then that's something to be considered. Would you agree?
Well, I don't really understand the objection. I believe God exists necessarily, if indeed God does exist. Now, I don't claim that the ontological argument is valid, so I would try to give arguments for that God exists asse, which means in Latin necessarily, that he is the only necessary existing thing. And that's how I approach that. So maybe we can get into that more, but I've talked enough. SJ.
SJ.
Can she hear?
SJ. Can you hear us?
Yes, sir.
I think working on it. It looks like she is.
I don't know.
Can you hear us?
If she can hear us. Can you hear us?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi. Can you do that? Hi. Can you Norse Gucci?
This is a good wrapping. This is a good wrapping point anyway.
She can't hear us.
Yeah.
Okay. Can't hear. Okay. All right. Frustrated Atheist, we'll let you wrap up
your
final thoughts, anything like that, and then we'll see if SJ maybe can get situated by then.
Okay, well, I still have yet to see any kind of actual selection between atheism equating to communism, even the other topic that whatchamacallit, that Steve had said about the two or whatever. Also, I just want to say that as far as the second half about the slavery issue is that my only thought is that if you have a omni-everything God and he is where we get this from, it should have been clear from the very get-go that slavery is wrong. And because he didn't specifically say that in the very beginning, hey, slavery is wrong. This is not even an argument to be made as far as the Christians go. Other than that, I have not much else to say about this.
Okay, SJ.
Is there any way I could go on?
Oh, I think we've crossed that bridge, Joshua. I think we're at a point where we're trying to wrap all up. Right. And
yeah, if we got a couple super chats, but we need to wrap up.
So SJ, can you hear us?
I don't think she can.
Okay. Are there any super chats, Steve, that are for the SJ or Joshua? Because if not, we're going to cut them loose. Any questions that pertain particularly to them?
There's one question I can ask.
Okay,
here.
Go ahead and ask that.
It is by the wonderful General Han Solo, Robert. We all love him, right? Let's see here. He says, wasn't Israel redeemed from slavery in Egypt? If so, and this is not super chat, but he wants me to ask this personally. So, if so, then were servants exclusively to God? Did their moral landscape result not only in opposition to or limitations of various forms of human servitude, but also carried over into the demands for humane treatment of the poor and destitute generally? So who were vulnerable to becoming slaves or otherwise suffering further abuse and exploitation? And I guess I'm reading into that question. Robert, I don't think it's a slavery apologist, but I'm trying to parse this question out. It's a very long, intricate question. So let's see here. Since they were servants exclusive to God, didn't their moral landscape result not only in opposition to or limitations of various forms of human servitude? So basically, where did they get the rules, I guess he's asking, for morals? Because obviously there was some carryover from other other places of how we should treat people. I mean, even the rules were based upon many other cultures around during that time. Maybe you guys can parse this out. I've given it all I can. Sorry, Robert. I don't know how else to read that. You guys want to try to stab
at it? Can you guys hear me?
Is that for me or SJ?
I think it's for either of you.
Either one of you.
Can you guys hear me?
I could hear you, SJ. Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. I think I wanted to bring up something that does have to do with, I think that this is, I only was able to hear part of that question, but I'm assuming it had to do with objective morality and where did that all come from?
Possible. He can be in the after show and I can ask him, but I don't really know where he's going with that right now, to be honest with you. And you're welcome.
Let me give you a study. There's a study by a guy called Kinnear, Kearns, and Douthribs, and it's from 2000, and it basically summarized a bunch of different religions. They looked at Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, Christianity, Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism, humanism, atheism, and the United Nations. They looked at all of those different groups, and they identified some commonalities. And in every group, almost every group agreed that there is a commitment to something greater than oneself, that all humans sort of stand like that. We have this fight to seek truth and justice. Second one is that we have self-respect with humility, self-discipline, and the acceptance of personal responsibility. The third one is respect and caring for others, which is like the golden rule. And the fourth one is caring for other living things in the environment. So those are objective standards the entire human race basically endorses, no matter where you stand on the religious spectrum, or even being a person who's an atheist, a non-religious person. So the question is, we have these standards, where do they arise from, and who's the moral lawgiver? That's basically what I would say. I'd say the fact that the entire human race has these objective moral standards speaks to the fact that it transcends generations. It means that it must come from something that also transcends generations.
Okay. I don't see any other questions for you two. So if you guys want to take off, we can finish up, wrap it up. Going to have an after show, which you're more than welcome to join, SJ, and we can maybe suss it out a little bit more. And you, Master Apologist, if you wish, that's fine as well. I don't see any more questions for you guys. But we do have a lot of super chats. Go. We got to wrap this up.
Okay.
Because I got to get the.
Well, at this point, we usually say goodbye to, I guess, so that we can get through the super chats and read those off and. Cut up for a little bit. Steve will be having an after show. He'll send the links out to you guys. And I want to thank you both for coming into the lion's den, so to speak.
Both of you.
This was interesting.
I want to say thank you to Steve for that hilarious tweet that I saw.
Which one?
Saw a hilarious. You said, I don't even want to repeat it, but it's very funny.
I think I know what you're thinking of. You're welcome.
Thank you both, and maybe we'll see you in the after show. But thanks for coming in the Lion's Den, and
I'll
good to see you again, SJ, and very nice to meet you, Master Apologist.
Yeah, likewise.
You guys
held it in there. I'm impressed. Good job.
Thank you.
Cool. All right, let's get to Master Apologist.
Okay, the super chats. All right. Yeah, that was some weird apologetics. When you make SJ look good, you might want to rethink your strategy. I mean, SJ's apologetics not the best, but I do.
I'm not gonna speak to them with personal cutdowns. But I mean, the reasons that he was giving were just ludicrous. I mean, it's just
I agree.
They were absolutely insane.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. AA, $2. Sounds very Orwellian, SJ. Pine Snake, £5. The rise of national happiness is in direct correlation to the fall of religiously held beliefs. There might be something to be said about that. When she did a, I don't know if you saw, but she did a post on something along the lines that Christianity makes one happy, but the study actually wasn't about Christianity, but religion in general, which included any religion, Buddhism, Jainism, even Satanism. So, and I think that, again, no, the correlation doesn't apply causation such that in those particular studies, as I was kind of looking into them, which basically just means people that had a social aspect were generally happier. I don't think it was the religious aspect that made them happier. I think it was the fact that they were just more likely to be more sociable and in those things that lead to happiness. But that's the way my take on it.
By the way, what tweet was she talking about?
Oh, I'll have to tell you. I'm going to tell you off air. You don't mind.
Frustrated Atheist, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
What kind of cereal are you eating? What kind of cereal are you eating?
Oh, I'm not eating any cereal. That's not coming from me.
That would be me, Kyle. Sorry.
Oh, what kind of cereal are you eating? I'm just curious because I'm craving some right now.
It's actually macaroni and cheese.
Oh, even better.
Yep.
I like my cereal.
Go ahead, Steve. Oh,
AA, $2. SJ, work on that stutter when you vomit bullshit. I don't think SJ was that bad this time. I mean, I really think that she was trying to get on point. I think she was trying to make some kind of argumentation that was relating to her comments that she had made relating communism to atheism. And I think after clarification, I think maybe her and Frustrated Atheist maybe were just having a miscommunication of sorts. But it was good to suss that out, though. Athena, Goddess of Wisdom and Warfare, $2. Wow. Fucking wow. My God. That is so...
That sums it up.
I like his tweets. Athena, Goddess of Wisdom. I like your tweets, your chat things. Wellington, it does, right? Wellington Smith, $5. God, quote, hey folks, stop slavery. Moses, okay, Lord, whatever you say, boss. Moses then writes a way out of slavery. Easy. Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
Brown coat G, $10 Aussie. And again, the excuse is that the all-knowing, all-powerful eye in the sky just couldn't figure out how to get through to his own creation. Uh-huh. Yep, seems legit. Yeah, I mean, there's just – it doesn't add up to me. It just doesn't. Brainerary, 50 croons. Heart pumps blood. Changing that would kill us. / Kyle is on fire. Okay.
Hold on.
Phipps.
Eat it out.
5 pounds. It is all – if all of nature and mankind's laws are laid out in a preconceived plan that is progressively revealed, then why have the Bible in the first place?
Oh, my grandma's calling me right now.
Tell her hi.
It's not the time to talk to grandma.
Puffalophagus, $2. And he's so happy that I can pronounce his name now correctly. Mm-hmm. We found an apologist worse than Ken Hovind. No, I'm not going to go that far. Look at Ken is, you know, younger.
Oh, he was way worse than Ken Hovind. No, way wow, worse than Ken Hovind.
You got to take things as an aggregate, right? In this particular, no. I don't know if I could go that far.
He's worse than George Lujak. He was worse than George Lujak.
No, 100%. No, George. 100%. Don't take away my bottom of the barrel, George. Come on. Really?
Nope.
No, he I wouldn't go George. That far.
No, I wouldn't go that far.
Absolutely, that far. He does. Absolutely, he does.
Duke, but we'll make that into a poll. Who is worse, George Lujak or this guy? Duke Bonanza, $5. So if God based the rules on society, he must be beholden to human whim and society. I don't think that was the argument they were making, but I'm not quite sure. Brant, $5. Happy for the content on your day off even. Thank you, Brant. We also have, again, tonight, we have the after show on my channel. We also got this channel and Jimmy's channel is going to be at home, and then tomorrow we also got things planned as well. So much for having weekends. Brian Neal, two shows tomorrow. Yeah, Brian Neal, $5. Hi peeps, ask the Christards why they complicate the obvious coming out of their text. Honestly, I think that's an apologetic tactic. I've seen many times when people want to argue from a place where they know they don't have a strong position, they take things out very tangentially. They bring up things that just have nothing to do with the core and crux of the argument. In this particular case, this is exactly what Joshua was doing. I got to tell you, maybe I'm going to have to go back and listen to a lot of this video over again. And if you guys watch this after the fact, comment on this, please, in the video description. But not 90% of what he had to say had nothing to do with any of the context of the conversation or points being made or topic of any kind. It was basically, I've read this book. I have this name over here. I didn't see really an engagement on the points being made. Did you, Kyle? I mean, did you get that impression? That just
because he doesn't have points. It boils down to this. They get backed into a corner with a hard reality, which is this time it happened to be slavery. And they dance around the issue until they get to the point where they're like, okay, we've gone so far off the topic. Let's move away from it. They try to do everything that they can to not admit that, yes, if God's real, he fucked it up this time. He got it wrong. You shouldn't own people. He should have said so. Instead, he was worried about who was sleeping with who, what kind of what skin you cut off of a little boy's penises and mixed linen and fabric. He was worried about all of that shit, just not the owning of people. He let that slide. I mean, this is not a God that minded what the people were feeling at the time or what they couldn't handle. This was a guy that sent tornadoes of fire and turned people into salt drown the entire planet in a global flood. He doesn't care about what you can handle and what you can't handle. The fact is, he condones slavery. Period. You can't dance around that, I don't think.
Yeah, the narrative that they're putting forward is not the typical narrative of the deity that's described in the Old Testament, I would think.
Yeah,
but let's not forget that Lauren, it's okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was gonna say let's just not forget that it's okay to own people, but he draws the line at shellfish.
Correct. Yeah, mixed fabric. Butt sex between the gays, all that stuff.
No, God cares a lot about butt sex. Yeah. Lars Nielsen, 200 crones. I think that's $20. I think something like that. Only Christians can go so low that they seriously start claiming that the slaves had it better than slaves rather than free. I don't know if it's just Christians. I mean, I see a lot of people. In a lot of cases, they really try to rationalize things. And when you have things that the rest of us find to be morally egregious, they will try to rationalize it in a perspective from their own viewpoint. And I think that extends way beyond just slavery. But it is pretty bad when you start arguing certain things because you get entrenched in this position. I've seen somebody argue that slavery was actually a good thing only because God had commanded it. At that point, you've lost all moral high ground with me. You really have. I mean, would you really want to even address somebody who says that slavery is good because God, you know, for either commanded or allowed it or regulated it? I don't know
they're
how that.
They're full of shit.
It makes no sense to me, right? I mean,
they're full of shit. They can't admit that one thing will be wrong because it negates the entire book. That's why it's so obviously flawed and untrue. I mean, it's sickeningly untrue. Like to even believe. That's a possibility is laughable to me. I mean, it's laughable.
Okay, Duke Bonanza, $5. Great question. Why didn't God teach calculus, physics, and germ theory of disease? Yeah, instead of like teaching things like we walk with dinosaurs and that you know there was 6,600 different kinds on the ark, I would have been happier if we had started calculus, you know, 4,000 years ago. We would have been a lot more further along in our society. Would you agree?
Yeah, but Steve, he said that they weren't ready to hear about owning people, but they're ready to hear about calculus. Like that.
Yeah,
what is he talking about?
I've never heard that apologetic before, so that's new. Reserved 100, $10. How can you expect to have flat oceans and no wind or any such things? God made certain rules on which whole galaxies run. You can't expect God stopping all diarrheas in the world for slavery. Okay. I can't parse that out very well, but thank you, though. Duke Bonanza, $5. Yes, religion has been dragged forward by modernity. Exactly. I don't get when people argue from things that 100 years ago, 200 years ago. If I hear one more person talk about Darwin, right, or one more person talk about Nikola Tesla, all great geniuses for who they were during the time, and who knows what they would have accomplished if they were in modernity. But to argue something – he brought up Aristotelian-type things. I hate to tell people, but Aristotelian logic is flawed. That's why they don't use Aristotelian logic. There's problems with it. Go look up the square of opposition. There's issues with Aristotelian. We moved past that.
Not only was his logic flawed, his conclusions were flawed.
Yes.
Plus, all those guys are busy helping develop cell phone. I mean, don't they know that? Like, why would he even invoke them? Nikola Tesla and Albert Einstein are working closely with.
Yeah, they're busy. Yeah, you know, they're busy in the afterlife. Yeah. Cell phone. Yeah, they don't have time for this. Wellington Smith, $2. Jesus didn't condemn slavery. Paul confirmed it. You know, that's a good point, too. We didn't even get to touch into that. Jesus himself did not really talk about a lot of things. He didn't talk about slavery. He didn't talk about homosexuality. These were nothing that Jesus gave a shit about if you really read the New Testament that way, right? If they're that big and concerned that he wanted people today to be against this stuff, I honestly think that somebody like Jesus would have mentioned it.
He was too busy walking on water and turning water into wine and multiplying bread and doing carpenter things, Steve, obviously.
Hey, somebody wants to know if a cell phone guys will ever return for an actual demonstration. Kyle, you're about on top it. Of something like that. Yeah, I doubt it too, but
I'm trying to get Dr. Schwartz and because he's the man that knows the technical details and what's going on. I would like for Mark to come back with Dr. Schwartz if he wants to. I don't think he will because I don't think it went very well for him, but I would be more than happy to have him back
I still have more questions that obviously he... Whoa.
Yeah, somebody disagreed.
But yeah, we're okay. Working on it.
Yeah. Brown coat, $5 Aussie. So God can say, yo, people, don't eat shrimp, you know, for reasons. But hey, don't eat people. don't own people, sorry. Don't own people.
Yeah, that either.
That either. That was too complex to get across. Yeah.
Although they make that case, though, Steve. This is my flesh. This is my blood. They're all fine with eating people. Cannibalism's okay.
Transubstantiation, I got to say, I hate to do this, but using just reason and logic, transubstantiation is a form of cannibalism. I don't like to bring it down to those kind of base levels, because you know me, I steel man people. I really do look for the best in their argument. I don't see how that's an escapable conclusion to me, though. How is it not? If according to transubstantiation, the way they argue it, right, a physical, actual change in the physiochemical properties of that wafer, that would be a form of cannibalism. I don't like those kind of arguments.
I'll tell you how, Steve.
I can't see any way around that.
Here's how they justify that. Like they do everything else, because it's coming from God, it's fine. Slavery coming from God, fine. What? Who are we to argue?
That's special pleading. Cannibalism. That's special pleading.
I'm just telling you what it is.
Yeah, that's
of course
weird.
It is. It makes no sense. But because God does it, it's fine. Who are we to us lowly people that He created? Who are we to challenge the all-powerful, cannibal, slave-owning God?
It would be different if they said, yes, it's cannibalism and God allows it. That's not special pleading. But to say that it's not cannibalism because God allows it, that's special pleading. Because you're no longer saying it is what it is because of something else. But yeah, it's weird. Kaj, 50 DKK kroners. Question to all. Do you see any beneficial potential in the ideas of communism, socialism? Also, could any of you pronounce my name better than Greater Sapien? I'm going to say this. Kaj Fromke? Is that close? Kaj Fromke?
Sure.
I don't know how Greater Sapien pronounced it. K-A-J, the last name, F-R-A-M-K-E. So I'm going to say Kaj Fromke. But anyways, do I see any potential for – yeah, actually, I'll go on a limb here. I'm going to take this one first. There are some benefits to communism. Matter of fact, there's two kind of forms of communism. It's low C and capital C and lowercase C. The original people that came over here from Plymouth Rock had a form of communism, as I learned it in school. Now, again, I don't get into these kind of discussions very much. I don't know that much about politics of this kind. But the way I understand communism, at least on a small scale, actually works pretty decently. It's when you get to the big C and the state type of communism where it falls apart completely. So if you're asking if there's any potential benefit of having communism on a very small scale, I would have to say, from my understanding, yes. But anybody else
sure.
want to touch that
I
question?
Mean, I think there's good things in anything. You can find some good in anything. Overall, I think it's horrible.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that too. All right, that's it for the Super Chats. Yeah. Wow, that was a hell of a show.
Yeah.
This was fun, guys.
That was definitely great.
Oh, we got two more. Sorry, one more. I refreshed. Quick, two more. We'll fast knock them out of the way. Nate Brody, aka MP, non sequitur is the best. Steve is an atheist. Thanks,
buddy. We know.
Not your witness. Not to witness, $4.20. Blue shirt sucks. Russ needed more time. Boo Kyle.
Who's Russ?
I'm Russ.
That's Russ. Okay, there you go.
Yeah. Oh.
Since my first name is Frustrated, he shortened it to Russ.
Gotcha.
I got it. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I agree. Russ, it happens. I'm sorry, Russ.
Yeah.
I kind of almost expected that.
Well, you did well.
I didn't see what threw us off, I think, was that we weren't all on the same page when we started.
Oh, yeah.
I think they came in, the three of them came in with a different topic, you know, in mind, and that's why it kind of went off the rails. But I just couldn't, the level to which it got, I couldn't keep it in anymore. Mm-hmm. I tried my best. Usually I'm pretty good at holding my tongue back, but I couldn't today. I'm frustrated.
Trust me.
we got to wrap this up. One last one that just came in. Brant, $13.68. Thank you, Brant. Brant, if the guys from SoulPhone are really talking to Tesla, don't you think he'd be keeping up with technology and telling their mediums about new iPhone, what the new iPhones to include? Yes. Yes, I do. I think Tesla would probably be, you know, if you're, it's,
so now it's, we're, yeah,
go. Let's do
we're
it.
Gonna let Frustrated Atheist wrap up his thoughts on today and make any last points that he wants to, and also plug his channel and social media following and all of that. So, Frustrated Atheist, whenever you're ready, sir, the floor is yours.
All righty. It's completely and utterly a shit show, and I do agree that it was probably because the fact that we didn't have a altogether understanding on what the topic was in the beginning. But when it came to slavery, I agree with Kyle again. You can't exactly keep your mouth closed whenever someone is factually wrong like that. So it was just a complete and utter, I don't want to say waste of time, because we did have a lot of good dialogue between all of us. But and to answer some of the people who might have asked throughout the chat, because I think I did see one, it was set up this way that it was going to be them two versus me, because that was the only way SJ would actually do the debate, was if he came along. So
she would have been a lot better without him.
It would have been a lot better without him.
I don't mean to disrespect a guy. I don't. I'm being sincere there. I really wanted to hear SJ's discussion on this, and I think that she was short. She was shorted on that because she decided to bring him.
Yeah, and so it would have been a lot better. But again, I'm Frustrated Atheist. Check me out if you like. Like I said in the beginning, I debunk a lot of complete and utter nonsense that a lot of the Christians and mainly young earth creationists say. I'm working on two different series right now. One's called Science for the Newly Deconverted, and the other one's called, it doesn't really have a name, but it's looking into the new independent fundamentalist Baptist group of people, and pretty much exposing how they are a cult. So, yeah.
Excellent. And we are going to do a communist talk. I was just looking at the live chat. Holy Kool-Aid said he would be interested in talking about communism in depth a little bit more, since he lived in a communist.
That'd be so cool. That would be awesome. There.
So, Frustrated Atheist, we will bring you back for that, and I'll let you know when we set that up so that you can be a part of that as well.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Cool.
All right, guys. I'm going to smoke a lot of weed right now and calm my nerves. I wasn't prepared for this early. I was not prepared for this. I thought it would be a nice, you know.
Yeah. You've earned it, Kyle.
Back and forth, but you've earned it. Not this. But thank you for tuning in, comrades and comradettes. Steve's channel for the after show, and to follow up any kind of thoughts that you guys have. And then we'll see you tonight. Back here at 7 for Ad Homies, maybe, if Jimmy gets off in time. I was talking to him earlier, and he may be working late, so we may be tabling that to next year. But hammers and sickles, and what else do they have in Russia? Vodka. Hammers, vodka, sickles, and vodka, and furry hats. What's something Russian?
Das Vidaniya.
Das Vidaniya.
I don't even know if that's a word.
Non sequitur, your facts are uncoordinated.